Support for this podcast comes from Avangrid. Tom Turnwald runs an Ohio millwork company that was started by his father and employs his kids.
I'm in favor of wind farms because I'm committed to attracting talent to our community, and the school districts with wind turbines get resources that can make a huge difference in kids' lives.
Since 2012, an Avangrid wind farm has strengthened the economy and contributes millions to the community each year. To learn more about where energy meets humanity, visit avangrid.com. That's avangrid.com.
From the New York Times, I'm Michael Barbaro. This is The Daily. Today, President Trump's plan to deregulate America is underway. He's starting in the heart of America with one of Barack Obama's most cherished regulations. And Donald Trump and Angela Merkel meet for the first time. One embraced open borders. The other is proudly closing them. It's Thursday, March 16th.
The assault on the American auto industry, believe me, is over. It's over. Not going to have it anymore.
In a suburb of Detroit on Wednesday, a crowd of auto workers gathered as President Trump made good on a campaign promise.
We're setting up a task force in every federal agency to identify and remove any regulation that undermines American auto production and any other kind of production.
It is a top priority for this White House, doing away with regulations on businesses, from Wall Street banks to gun manufacturers. Trump's top advisor, Steve Bannon, has called it the
deconstruction of the administrative state,
systematically unraveling a patchwork of rules that expanded dramatically under President Obama.
The way the progressive left runs is if they can't get it passed, they're just going to put it in some sort of regulation in an agency. That's all going to be deconstructed.
Republican presidents have long pledged to roll back regulation, but for Donald Trump, it's personal.
This is a guy who spent his entire career in the private sector as a private company, not even a publicly traded company. And so he truly was his own boss.
Mm-hmm.
He did his own thing. And I think he wants to make the federal government more into that mold.
Eric Lipton is an investigative reporter for The Times who's tracking every change in regulation under President Trump.
There's a feeling among Republicans in particular and the business community that the Obama administration went way overboard in terms of setting rules in a way that has led to such cost that it prevents businesses from being profitable and also from increasing employment potentially.
I guess every president gets asked by American industry to roll back some set of regulations. Is Trump just being much more responsive to those industry requests?
Sometimes it's only a matter of days or weeks between the ask and the action. And I mean, across more than a dozen different rules, I was able to find industry players from the NRA to major corporations that didn't like rules on pay ratios regarding CEOs to, you know, the broadband, where the industry said, we don't like this. And then very quickly, the rules are gone.
So they ask, he acts.
Yes.
I want to drill down on one example of these regulations Trump opposes, the fuel efficiency standards that he attacked yesterday in Michigan. And before we talk about dismantling them.
So for decades, the fuel efficiency standards of our cars and trucks was stuck in neutral.
I want to talk with you about how they were constructed under the Obama administration.
Well, in 2012,
we set in motion the first ever national policy aimed at both increasing gas mileage and decreasing greenhouse gas pollution for all new cars and trucks sold in the United States.
There was an informal agreement among the automakers and the Obama administration to try to improve the environment and reduce greenhouse gases.
We're talking about 12 billion barrels of oil saved. These are numbers that are not to be sneezed at, ladies and gentlemen.
And so that was the agreement.
The consumers agree, labor agrees, the automakers agree, environmentalists agree, the public agrees. Everyone agrees that this is good for consumers, the industry, the nation.
Then it took a number of years for the automakers and the EPA to actually write a rule.
We saw the automakers standing up with the president.
And that is now essentially in place.
We saw them touting this initiative because they knew that they could be producing cars that were more efficient and that consumers would want to purchase.
So now President Trump says he wants to undo those auto regulations. And I'm struck by how easy it seems for him to do that. Because Obama, when it came to the environment, did a lot of his rulemaking by executive order. And when you're in office, it would seem to me that's great. But the problem is when there's a new executive, it doesn't seem so great anymore. Is that pretty much what's happening here?
Definitely. Obama was quite frustrated by his inability to get things through Congress. As time passed, and especially towards his second term, he finally essentially lost patience and decided to do much of this through executive action. And he himself said, you know, you live by the pen, you die by the pen. That's the situation he's now facing, where Trump has come in and wants to roll back these same rules.
Right. I mean, because once Trump is elected, it's not the person that President Obama had expected and hoped would win and would maintain these regulations. And in Trump's first couple of days in office, he took a meeting.
I want to thank everybody. Perhaps we could go around the table, introduce ourselves, and say hello. I'll start. I'm Donald Trump. Mary, go ahead.
Mary Barra, Chairman and CEO of General Motors.
The top auto executives from the country.
Mark Fields, President and CEO of Ford Motor Company.
What is going on now from the auto company's CEO's point of view right now in the Roosevelt Room in the West Wing?
Right now, I think they're really starting to maybe establish a pretty friendly rapport.
What did they talk about in that meeting?
Among the things they talked about was the standard and their desire to see it rolled back.
You know, one of the things they're grousing about privately, and this could end up being public, are the standards for fuel economy that were put into place under the Obama administration.
They need to see that it's going to be a better place to do business in their eyes in order for them to invest more in the U.S. That's the bottom line.
We're bringing manufacturing back to the United States bigly. We're reducing taxes very substantially, and we're reducing unnecessary regulations. And we want regulations, but we want real regulations that mean something.
We just had a great conversation with the president. I think as an industry, we're excited about working together on regulation and on trade to really create a renaissance in American manufacturing.
So I have to ask, what exactly has changed for the automakers besides the person sitting in the Oval Office?
They argue that the technology involved has turned out to be more complicated and expensive than they had anticipated. And also, consumers are driving cars that use more gasoline because the gasoline prices went down. And so they are facing, you know, consumer purchase desires that they want to be able to respond to by selling cars that are faster and heavier, and therefore consume more gasoline. So they were now convinced that it was hurting their businesses, and they wanted the EPA to reevaluate it yet again, even though, in fact, the EPA had just completed such a reevaluation. So they turned to the new head of the EPA and to the president and said, you know, let's essentially reconsider this. And that's what they're going to be doing. They're going to study it again. I mean, it's a classic federal move. But when they say they're going to study it again, they're going to attempt to come up with sort of a scientific justification to roll back the requirement.
Which brings me to Scott Pruitt and what role he will play in all of this as the new head of the Environmental Protection Agency, because he's somebody who has questioned the very point of the EPA. So what role is he going to play in these auto emissions regulations?
Well, he's appointing all the people at the EPA who are going to oversee this process, and he himself has openly questioned recently whether or not CO2 is a significant factor in climate change.
No, I think that measuring with precision human activity on the climate is something very challenging to do, and there's tremendous disagreement about the degree of impact.
I mean, he argues that he just has a different scientific perspective, but we also know that he has a close alliance with a lot of the industry players from the oil and gas industry that want these changes.
And you're keeping really close track of this. Just how many regulations has President Trump started to roll back in just the month and a half or so he's been president?
I mean, as of a week ago, we had identified at least 90 rules that had been either nullified, suspended, or delayed. Everything from whether or not hybrid cars have to have a sound when they are driving because of concern that perhaps you could be hit by the car, to whether or not streams need to be protected from coal mines. I mean, just about every sector of the economy, the rules are being suspended, delayed, or nullified.
Today I am announcing that we are going to cancel that executive action. And we are going to ensure that any regulations we have protect and defend your jobs, your factories. We're going to be fair.
This morning, President Trump will release his proposed federal budget for the next year. The Times reports that it will reduce funding for the Environmental Protection Agency by 31%. We'll be right back.
This podcast is supported by Amelia Perez, Zoe Saldana, Carla Sofia Gascon, and Selena Gomez, star in director Jacques Audiard's audacious, genre-defying movie, hailed as the year's best picture. An electrifying odyssey boasting tour de force performances, liberating song and dance, and bold visuals. The London Standard calls it a work of brilliance. Time hails it an exuberant ode to human possibility. And Vanity Fair raves, there is no other movie like Amelia Perez, a thrilling reminder of the limitless potential of this medium. On Netflix in the US, UK, and Canada.
What can a painting of Queen Elizabeth I teach us about power? And how did tattoos become both revered and reviled? Hi, I'm Isabella Rossellini, and in the first episode of This Is Not a Beauty Podcast, we'll hear from a top Capitol Hill makeup artist and meet the world's oldest tattooist to understand how beauty shapes politics. Listen now on your favorite podcast platform, brought to you by L'Oreal Group.
Hey, it's John Chase.
And Mari Uehara.
From Wirecutter, the product recommendation service from the New York Times. Mari, it is gift-giving time. What's an easy gift for someone like under 50 bucks?
So in our Gifts Under 50 guide, we have this super cute palm-sized Bluetooth speaker. It comes in an array of cool colors. It's waterproof. You can bring it anywhere. I want one for my garden.
I love it. Check out all of Wirecutter's gift recommendations for yourself and everyone else at nytimes.com/holidayguide.
Hello.
Allison, hey, it's Michael Barbaro.
Hi, Michael, how are you?
Good, how are you? How have you been?
Okay, thank you. Having done this massive Merkel Putin story, I've just recovered from that, and here we are.
Now it's time for Merkel and Trump.
Yeah, exactly.
Allison Smale is the Berlin bureau chief for the Times. German Chancellor Angela Merkel is heading to Washington on Friday for her first meeting with President Trump. She has been called the last defender of the liberal West in Europe. He is a populist who has repeatedly criticized Germany's welcome of refugees. It's a different relationship than the one Merkel had with President Obama.
Hello? Is this my sweet Barack? Barack Obama, I miss you.
No, it's Donald Trump.
Oh, gross. Hi, Donald. Are all your people still protesting?
Yes, everyone is marching in the street. They are so upset about how bad The Apprentice has gotten.
Let's first of all remember that her relationship with Barack Obama was not initially as warm as it was at the end of his time in power. And I think what actually made the relationship a lot closer was her embrace of refugees.
Last year, Germany opened its arms to more than 1 million refugees, the vast majority from Syria and Iraq. The move won applause for Chancellor Angela Merkel.
German Chancellor Angela Merkel rallied the nation to tackle the refugee crisis with pragmatic compassion.
This struck a chord in the Obama White House.
What do you mean?
Well, what I mean is that the Obama White House was very sympathetic to the fact that Germany had opened its arms to so many people at a time when, in the United States, the restrictions even on very well-checked-out Syrian refugees were becoming tighter and tighter.
I am now requesting that the President and the federal government cease sending refugees from Syria to North Carolina.
And a number of governors, in fact, refused to accept them after the San Bernardino attacks.
Welcome back to Hannity. Now here at home, dozens of governors have announced that they will not welcome Syrian refugees into their states.
Indiana Governor Mike Pence is one of those governors. Governor Pence goes on the record from Indianapolis.
I directed all state agencies in the state of Indiana today to immediately suspend all resettlement efforts for Syrian refugees until we could receive the absolute assurance that individuals coming into our state did not represent a threat to our people. I have no higher priority.
Just to place this in context, when you say accept refugees, what exactly do you mean and when exactly do you mean in Germany?
Well, talking about the hundreds of thousands who did stream into this country in the summer and fall of 2015, beside the display of open-heartedness and a big welcome for the refugees, the right wing has also risen here, as it has elsewhere in Europe.
Support for extreme right-wing groups is growing amid worrying echoes of Germany's dark past.
And it is still very much a 50-50 issue, an issue that has cut right across German society. Ms. Merkel's management of it is one of the things that will be up for judgment ahead of the national elections in September.
It's so interesting to learn that Merkel's handling of the refugee crisis is what drew Obama closer to her, because it's the very thing that has generated the most tension between Merkel and Trump.
I always thought Merkel was like this great leader. What she's done in Germany is insane. It's insane. They're having all sorts of attacks. They're having
letting in
many people.
According to her spokesman, German Chancellor Angela Merkel called Mr. Trump directly to reiterate the Geneva Convention's rules requiring aid to refugees.
Trump's aligned himself with populist candidates in Europe who are also anxious about refugees and immigration. When you talk about the far right in Germany, under Merkel's leadership, isn't Germany different than the rest of Europe?
Well, I think that it doesn't have a movement that is as strong as, let's say, the Front National led by Marine Le Pen in France.
Je suis la seule candidate capable de protéger les Français.
I mean, first of all, Germany is without question Europe's number one economic power.
So you're saying the economic success of Germany is a mitigating force here? It kind of balances?
I think it's a mitigating force. But the thing we must remember is that Germany's constitution says in its very first article, the value of a human being cannot be touched, cannot be harmed. And also because of its past, Germany is very much minded to take in people who require asylum from war, from harassment.
When you say because of its past, what do you mean?
When I mean because of the Nazi past in which, you know, people tried to flee Germany and perhaps found other countries not willing to take them in.
The liner St. Louis, turned back from Cuba, brings its human cargo to port at last. 907 Jewish unfortunates without a country, permitted to land in Belgium after 5 weeks of suspense afloat.
They were forced out of Germany in the first place. Many of them, as we know, were murdered. The size of these crimes means that Germany has legislation and an approach that it considers it must take in order to show that it understands the nature of its crimes and the need to atone.
Does Angela Merkel need Donald Trump's support?
I think she does, in the sense that Germany, after 1945, was a creation of the Allied powers and above all of the United States. And they know that it is the foundation of their prosperity and their reacceptance into the civilized world after 1945.
Right.
And then all the more when reunification happened, and Ms. Merkel, as somebody who grew up in East Germany, is particularly mindful of this.
Brandenburg Gate, of course, is in East Berlin, and the sound that you hear and what you're seeing tonight, not hammers and sickles, but hammers and chisels as young people take down this wall.
This was something that the Americans and the Russians had to agree to as the Allied powers from World War II, and they did so. And since then, the reunified country has gone from strength to strength most of the time, and it seems as if everybody is now realizing the degree to which that also depends on the U.S. security blanket.
I don't hear from the other countries in NATO. I don't hear from Germany. I only hear from the United States.
This is why Ms. Merkel and her defense minister, Ursula von der Leyen, have gone out of their way in the past week.
And it's all fine if everybody partakes, but I don't see other people partaking.
To emphasize that Germany is ready to do more on defense spending because they know how much Germany depends on the security umbrella offered by the United States.
Why are we paying disproportionately the cost of NATO? We're paying a tremendous amount more than we should be from the standpoint of proportion.
So are we looking at someone who's probably and maybe quite reluctantly been drawn a little bit closer to where Donald Trump is than perhaps Angela Merkel ever wanted to be as she heads to Washington to meet him?
However nice she will be, and I'm sure she will be unfailingly polite and as open as she can be with President Trump, it's hard to see that she would be actually guided by him or indeed any other foreign leader in formulating the policies that she thinks are right for her country. She's had a lot of experience dealing with male leaders who consider themselves to be quite powerful and strong. And what we have seen over the period of time that she's been in power now since 2005 is an increasingly self-confident politician who has managed her fair share of crises.
Thanks, Allison.
Thank you.
Here's what else you need to know today.
This ruling makes us look weak.
A federal judge in Hawaii blocked President Trump's revised ban on travelers from predominantly Muslim countries just hours before it was set to go into effect.
We're going to fight this terrible ruling. We're going to take our case as far as it needs to go, including all the way up to the Supreme Court. We're going to win. We're going to keep our citizens safe.
It's the second time a federal court has prevented the president from enforcing such a ban. And
we're here to announce a major law enforcement action related to one of the largest data breaches in U.S. history.
The Department of Justice has charged two Russian intelligence officers,
Dmitry Dokachayev and Igor Sushchin,
with directing the cyber attack on 500 million Yahoo email accounts in 2014. Prosecutors say that the Russian government used the information it obtained from those accounts to spy on foreign officials, business executives, and journalists.
We will not allow individuals, groups, nation states, or a combination of them to compromise the privacy of our citizens, the economic interests of our companies, or the security of our country.
Finally, Australia's Great Barrier Reef is dying. And at a far faster rate than scientists had predicted.
The largest living structure on Earth, the Great Barrier Reef, is a lacy, living wall.
Overheating ocean water has killed nearly two-thirds of the reef. Scientists are blaming warming temperatures caused by man-made fuel emissions. That's it for The Daily. Before we go, this is a new show. I want to hear what you think about it. Send a text to 63937. And if you want, you can sign up to receive texts from me. That number again is 63937. I'm Michael Barbaro. See you tomorrow.
Many think of beauty and health as disconnected, but beauty and wellness are really two sides of the same coin. Hello, I'm Isabella Rossellini, and in the final episode of This Is Not a Beauty podcast, we'll hear from a cancer survivor, an anthropologist, and a carer of the elderly about the relationship between beauty and health. Listen now on your favorite podcast platform.